Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Well, good morning to you, 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. This is the Andy Griffin Show on Mayor Thursday, and I'm lucky enough to have the freshly returned from Central America, Chris Staley, here. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good morning, Andy. Good morning, everyone.
And by the way, folks, in case you hadn't heard, Chris will be the mayor again because all you need is one. So you just vote for yourself and you're in.
Short of any, crazy write-in candidate, I'm running unopposed.
Yeah, that's awesome. Way to go. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't being unopposed, isn't that kind of a sign that everybody's happy with the job you're doing?
Well, I hope so. I've gotten a lot of really positive feedback, and I really think it's a reflection of just I have a great council. I've got a great staff. We've turned over some staff, and we've got a city manager and department heads and council members that really kind of buy into this culture of collaboration and pulling together and doing our best for the residents. So, yeah, I'm just that it's really humbling and really happy that. That I'll have another 4 years, most likely.
Yeah, very, very cool. Again, congratulations on that. Also, the city council, the two incumbents and then just one challenger in the city council, so no primary.
Yeah, right? No primary. And it was interesting because up until just before 5 o'clock on Friday when the filing deadline approached, we had no challengers. It was just the incumbent. And so I really think that's a reflection of just kind of the elected body as a group. And I remember when because myself and Councilwoman Casperson and Councilman Henderson, we all came in together 4 years ago. And I remember when we took the oath of office, I said, you're going to be really surprised at how effective and how well these individuals do. And so I think it's also a reflection on them and their ability, as part of that legislative body to lead. And, certainly, this is America and we're a democracy where people can run for office. But I think it's as much a reflection on them and their service, or maybe just of our collective service that we do together. And so, and the other thing I was kind of thinking too is there's a learning curve in things. Yeah. And so, my first term as a mayor, I've been on the council and planning commission prior, but their first term on the council, they learned a lot. They learned quick, but I kind of feel like that second term is really where you really hit your stride and are even more effective.
I think, I agree with that completely. And I think about someone like House of Representatives, like Celeste Malloy. She has 2 years. And, so you go through this big process, you get elected, then you basically really only have a year or a little over a year. And then you got to start campaigning again to try to be reelected to continue the job. And at least you guys had the 4 years. But man, that whole deal about learning on, at first is a big deal.
Well, it's interesting because and I've looked at the other municipalities around the county, and there are a lot of great individuals, running, throwing their hat in the ring. And sometimes candidates, I know, initially for me, there were certain topics or subjects that motivated me to get involved. And I think that's the case for a lot of council members. But then as you get involved, you recognize that municipal government is kind of its own animal. And then you start to realize, oh, here is where I can contribute. Here's how we can, benefit our community. And so, I look at Councilwoman Casperson. She, she has been very effective. But some of her initial, motivations were a little more national type issues. But she's settled in and brings this amazing perspective on the local issues. And I just see, the effectiveness that she has and the ability that she has to for one thing, I love that she brings that female perspective, that, family, that mom perspective, but she brings such a needed dynamic. And so, sometimes we'll be, going down a certain route and she'll bring something up that maybe the rest of the group hadn't considered. And so it's really cool to see people bring their own skill set, but also as they learn on the job, realize how can we be even better and better. So I think for good council members, a second term is very valuable.
So you got Kim McCasperson, Brett Henderson, and then Ed Tracy is the one challenger for that spot in the city council. Did you hear about Eden up there in Weaver County?
No, tell us about it.
This is crazy. Eden had one challenger for three spots open, basically. I mean, the mayor and then the two city council spots. They had 37 in the town of Eden in northern Utah.
How many? What's the population?
37. Eden is not real big. I think it's smaller than Washington City. So, but yeah, you think about that. I think the mayor and there were actually four city council spots, but still 37.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that is. Like, I don't even know how you fit that many names on the ballot.
The primary is going to be crazy because they've got to cut it down to what? If there are four or five spots, so they've got to cut it down to 10.
Two per.
Out of 37.
No, that is crazy. I know my recorder, Tara, she's just happy that, you know, we don't have to have a primary, and it saves the taxpayers $50,000 in expense for not having the primary, so...
Yeah, it's a lot.
But honestly, I would welcome anybody to run. I think if you feel like that's where you need to be involved, it's one of the opportunities that we have in this country, and so, you know, I love that democracy. But I'm not complaining about not having to spend as much time and money on a campaign.
Yeah, that's right.
But I'll be watching closely the other communities because there's some other really interesting races, and really we're also interconnected here in Dixie that it'll be interesting to see how those other ones shake out.
Eden has about 1,000 people, by the way.
Oh, my goodness. Well. So that's almost 4% of the population.
37 of them are running for office. That's crazy. If you think about, again, what's happening. So I look at St. George City is going to have a primary in the mayor's race. They have four people.
Right.
Including the incumbent, Michelle Randall.
Right.
And there are other towns. Hurricane, I think, has four running against Nanette Billings. So three running against Nanette. She'll be the fourth. And so to have what happened in the mayor position, isn't that kind of unusual to not have someone running against you?
So I really loved kind of being mentored, if I may, by both Mayor Hart and Mayor Rosenberg.
Yeah.
And
talking about Ivins and Santa Clara.
Yeah, I just really look up to and respect each of those mayors. And
both of whom, by the way, did not run, are not running again.
Yeah, they've served for years and done so well for their communities. But as I recall... at times they've ran unopposed. And so maybe I'm learning a thing or two from them.
Nice. Yeah.
And I think also the mayor position is different than the council. I think communities recognize that if you can have someone that brings a stability, that brings, you know, a passion, mm-hmm. and is kind of that ambassador and representative for the city that does a good job, I think communities like to have a little more consistency in that mayorship. At least I've noticed, and maybe not, but certainly if they're pleased with the direction, and maybe this is a reflection of the community being pleased with the direction we're going in Washington.
Well, and Kenny was mayor for what, 12 years?
12 years.
Yeah, and Dan MacArthur, St. George, was mayor for like 190 years or something. It was a 30-something, I think.
Well, prior to Mayor Nielsen, we had Mayor Terrell Clove.
Terrell Clove.
And I want to say he was there for 16.
Yeah.
And, you know, both great men, dear friends of mine, and did a great job for their time, and now it's a little bit of a different time today, so.
Well, congratulations again, and for those that hadn't heard, Mayor Chris Staley will be mayor again unless something weird happens, you know, like your house burns down and you have to move to Timbuktu or something.
No, we would find a way. We would, you know, I've got plenty of relatives in Washington.
And I hear you have a good insurance salesman, too.
Yeah, I got got a great policy.
Yeah. he is running unopposed, so no primary, obviously. And then when the general election comes in November, yeah, you can, I guess, write in candidates, but those usually are not real successful. And so, that'll be awesome. Congratulations.
I guess we'll
do a little more radio then, won't we, huh?
Yeah, it'll be fun.
It'll be fun. Now, you just got back from a trip, I guess just a vacation, right, down to Costa Rica?
You know, I feel bad because our older children, when they graduated from high school, did not get a trip to Costa Rica.
Oh.
But our youngest did. We had a little more ability to do that.
You took your girl on a trip, did you?
So we went down. She said anywhere with the beach, and we found a pretty good deal.
Anywhere the beach?
We wore ourselves out on the beach in the jungle and just having a great time down there in Central America.
Was there, people talk about Costa Rica a lot. Now, I learned some things about Costa Rica from Gary Sorensen from Morris Columbus Travel. First of all, Costa Rica is a very educated, you think Central America, you kind of think poor and whatever, but Costa Rica is actually very, I wouldn't say affluent, but they're fine financially and they're very well educated. I think their literacy rate is 98%, which is way higher than the United States.
Right. And many bilingual.
Yeah. And they, yeah, a lot of them speak English. College, university is free in Costa Rica for residents. And not, it's kind of like, you know how we kind of expect everyone to go through high school and then college is optional. Well, college is kind of one of the, they expect you to go to college too in Costa Rica. So very well educated country.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. And they really buy into promoting that they're Central America. So they buy into a lot of those American principles of democracy and
nice.
And you know kind of that's capitalism. So I mean tourism is a big industry
there.
We like
capitalism, yeah.
But you know as you were saying that and their ability to fund education like that, I found it interesting that they abolished their national army in 1948.
That is one thing about
where
Costa Rica.
They don't have the defense spending that America,
they do have
the United States has.
They have police force, but they don't have, yeah, there's no army or navy or any of that stuff in Costa Rica. And so they depend on Big Brother up north here to take care of them.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll tell you though, Andy, those, the jungle, those rainforests, they are so dense. Anyone invading Costa Rica would just have their work cut out for them. I mean, just driving, we went out to a little beach town called Jaco, but it's an hour and a half, 2 hours out of San Jose, and just the amount of work that even the road crews have to do to keep the jungle from, you know, growing over those little two-lane roads is significant.
Now I'm guessing, I don't know, and this is totally unscripted. Monkeys? Were there monkeys? Did you see lots of monkeys?
Yeah, so we.
I love monkeys.
So we saw a lot of monkeys. We went to the what they call the Manuel Antonio National Park.
Okay.
And we saw these black howler monkeys, and mm-hmm. they are loud, and they're high up in the trees, and then we saw a ton of little like capuchin monkeys.
Okay. Yeah.
And they were all over the place.
You didn't sneak one home, did you?
No, they're fun to watch. They're smart little buggers and you know, jumping from tree to tree. You could do the monkey tours, but my wife, she said, look, I don't want a monkey on me. I don't want the monkey doing their business on me. Seeing them from a safe distance is great. And we were pretty close. Although I will tell you the coolest thing we saw, and we hired a guide when we went into the national park there for the tour. And they bring in like these really high power scopes because you want to be able to see like the howlers, especially are up high. But we actually, We saw a sloth way up in the trees, and they were walking along one of these wooden bridges, and there was a sloth coming down a tree. So we were like 5 or 10 feet from a sloth and just watched his three-toe just go all the way down. You could almost reach out and touch it. So he said that doesn't happen very often. He said, you know, every like, you know, a couple of times a year is all that you get to see a sloth close. So that was pretty cool.
Was it as slow as the cartoons make them out to be?
They're pretty slow.
Okay.
But they're cute. And then apparently there's like the three-toed sloth that's kind of gray. And then when we got into like this kind of beach area, beautiful beach area, by the way, there are the two-toed sloths. And they're kind of blonder and a little more attractive. But but yeah, it was awesome. We saw like tons of iguanas and macaws and toucans. I mean, it's a great rugged beach country.
So do you have advice for anyone that is thinking about Costa Rica? I don't know that we would be going anytime soon, but maybe you could talk me into it. What would be the advice? What do I need to know before I go?
So before you go, let's see, what advice? There was a few things that I thought of. You know, bring some cash. Or at least bring a debit card to get cash from the ATM. Because if you're, you know, kind of buying souvenirs and stuff, and sometimes.
So they take American currency.
Yeah, they take American. Sometimes they'll give you your change in colognes. But it's interesting because, like, in colognes, you might buy lunch and it's $6,900. You're like, or colognes. And then you have to, you have to, like, convert that to dollars. So you just kind of times it by two. Move the decimal over, and you're just under $14.
Okay,
you know,
okay, got
so
it.
You got to kind of do the translation. But food necessarily isn't cheaper there. But highly recommend. The biggest thing I would recommend is find the tour. We did some fun tours. We went out to Tortuga Island, you know, like they talk about on Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah. That was awesome. But maybe our funnest was we actually booked a private tour just from a local, not like a big tour company, to go do like a waterfall tour. And so we hiked in through the jungle. He's telling us all about like the leaf eating ants and you can eat this plant. And I mean, just all of kind of the ecosystems. And then we come in and into this huge waterfall. And it was awesome because it was just kind of a private tour with the three of us and Carlos. And then we were able to climb up and just do some cliff jumping into the pool of the waterfall. That awesome. So that was maybe the highlight, at least for me and my daughter. She liked that too.
I have a weakness with waterfalls. I have to get in them. I can't help it. And my wife's like, no, you shouldn't be getting in that water. But I do it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love waterfalls. So
that's my other advice. Find a private tour for at least one of them. They don't rush you as much as the group tours. And then if you can get to, the little restaurant, Mary's restaurant up at the top of like Hako Falls, order the empanada.
Okay.
That's the other advice.
Like empanada, that would be a sweet thing, right?
This one was more of a savory. It was actually a corn empanada, and you can get them with like chicken or like pinto beans and cheese, and it's really good and way less greasy than we tried another one later, and it's just like, you have to get it from the right place.
So. Okay, all right, got it. Well, welcome back, and glad you're here. City council meeting. So you got back Wednesday, right? So you were back in time to get some work in and actually get over to city council.
Yeah.
What was the mood like, the atmosphere after filing day? Jimmy Kesson likes to call it the declaration week.
Yeah.
You know, you're declaring to be a candidate. Was everybody pretty light mood, pretty happy?
Yeah. I mean, we have just a really good dynamic within our group. And so, like, we usually get there a little early and we eat together and, we didn't have a workshop meeting. We just didn't have any need for a workshop meeting. So honestly, sometimes when you have things going in the right direction, it can kind of almost get a little bit boring, which is great. I if we can avoid all of, you know, controversy and too much excitement, that's really good. But we had just some really fun interactions. Maybe the best part for me last night, aside from, you know, passing the budget, with one little change there, is we had, Coach Abbott come in with some of his seniors. Crimson Cliffs High School won state baseball again. That's a Washington school. And so, you know, 3 out of the last 4 years. So Coach Abbott brought some seniors in and we were able to kind of recognize them and congratulate them.
Did McKay Wright come over?
McKay wasn't. A lot of them are playing, and so we had I forget the one kid's name, but MacArthur, Whitwer, and then the pitcher that pitched, you know, kind of those middle innings of the second game. Did they call him like Hat or Hot? I forget. It was a long day, but I can't quite remember.
I got sick, and unfortunately, I had a little flare up with my sepsis and everything, and missed a couple of games. But congratulations to Crimson, state champs again. Holy cow, it's 3 out of 4 is close to dynasty right there.
Well, and, you know, they had so much positive to say about Coach Abbott and the whole coaching staff. In fact, one thing that's kind of cool is they even have a coach on the team that's kind of like, that helps them, like, with the mental aspect of the game. And because that's one thing we talked about last night is they came in as an 8 seed. And, you know, they had lost a lot of really close games to great teams like, you know, Desert Hills and Dixie and Snow Canyon. But I think just kind of that mental approach to the game really helped them, especially they talked about kind of in that semifinal round when they were playing Timpanogos and was able to come in and you know, come back from a couple of runs down. And so they call it kind of gritty and just kind of believing and never giving up. So that was cool to just kind of, you know, I asked each of the boys, I said, you know, what are those life lessons that you're going to take away when you're done with the game from Coach Abbott? And they all just kind of talked about that belief and never giving up. And I think those things are, you know, translate and parallel from, you know, sports to life.
And I've always been a big believer athletically that, you know, you learn to set goals. I'm a big fan of athletics. I actually had Trayton Staley, probably, yeah. What is he?
Cousin's son.
Yeah, the second cousin, whatever they call it, when it's that. But he's working for a company here locally, and I had him in yesterday, and we were talking about that and how, you know, he's just coming off a college baseball career, and he's like, you know, athletics has helped me to, you know, you learn to overcome adversity. You learn to how to deal with things when you don't get your own way. You learn to set goals. You learn to try to accomplish things, not only as yourself, but also as a team. And, you know, like I said, I've always been a big believer that athletics is really, really good for young people.
Yeah.
So I was trying to find that kid's name. I feel bad that we didn't get everybody's name.
It starts with
name.
An H. Well, transferred in, pitcher.
Okay, let me get the right year here. It is 24-25 school year. I was looking for 25-26 because it's 25 and extra 26. But okay, Hagwood.
That's it.
Jace Hagwood.
Yeah. Great kid. He gave some really, really key, pitched some really key innings there through the middle of that final game against some great kids from Snow Canyon. I mean, it was just kind of back and forth and.
They did, yeah, and for those who don't remember, Crimson won in two games against Snow Canyon. A lot of people thought that would go three for sure,
yeah. But
they ended up getting them in two. And, you know, you never want to go to a three because it's winner take all. You never know what's going to happen.
Right, point, so and nobody has it. I mean, typically nobody has any pitching.
Right, yeah, they're throwing Chris Staley against Andy Griffin.
Andy's going yard on that, no doubt.
A lot of runs coming up on that one. All right, let's do this. Let's take a timeout. When we come back, I know there are a couple of projects you wanted to get some updates on.
Would love it.
As Chris Staley is with us here today on the Andy Griffin Show. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
It's so interesting when you watch the news cycle. We're here with Chris Staley on the Andy Griffin Show that, you know, stories keep popping up. I noticed NPR and some of the more a little bit, let's call them more liberal websites were talking about water and public lands and how, you know, we all want to kill tortoises or something. That's our motivation. I don't know. But anyway, these stories keep coming back. It's almost like they're recycled every month or two. One of these stories pops in, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask Chris Staley, water plan for Washington City right now. What's the plan here?
Yeah. So we're doing well, but we're coming off two polar opposite years.
Yeah.
This most recent winter was
the worst ever.
The lowest watershed on record.
Yeah.
The year before was record breaking.
Yeah.
With snowpack.
One of the best. Yeah.
Now we had some relief with late rain, but late rain isn't as good as winter snow.
Right.
That can flow down into those reservoirs. We're doing well. I see a lot of turf removal. I along Green Spring Drive when we had the Mayor's Cup a couple weeks ago.
How'd you do, by the way?
So I did wonderful. I don't golf. So I kicked them all off. I welcomed everyone, thanked them. I thanked them for the cause of helping out the Utah Food Bank and then gave away some prizes at the golf shop there at the pro shop, but it was a great event. And
so you didn't get any bogeys because you didn't.
Yeah, a perfect game.
Yeah.
In fact, you know what's sad? So it's literally the Mayor's Cup, and technically Mayor Nelson, who's an avid golfer, started this.
Yeah.
But when I came on 4 years ago, I'm like, well, this is a great tradition, but let's make it do it for a cause. So that's when we partnered officially with the Utah Food Bank. And then really the, you know, relatively young and new Washington Rotary, they're the ones that do the heavy lifting. So it's a collaborative approach, but, Mayor Nelson deserves a lot of the credit for getting that started. And yeah, it's a good event. I'm glad we continue to do it.
You need to have a mayor's 10K or mayor's half marathon or something and raise money because that's your thing.
Yeah, I know.
If I was mayor, it'd be the mayor's pickleball team.
I can't sit still, long enough to golf. Yeah. I mean,
I funny story about that. So the other day, they thought it would be a good kind of bonding experience to have the staff meeting for the city full-time. And they went out to Green Spring Golf Course and golfed. And anybody that knows my wife knows that she does not golf. She's been... This might have been, I believe, her first time in her life that she actually hit, went nine holes. And I said, well, did you get halfway decent by the end? And she go, well, I was no longer dribbling the ball off of the tee. It was actually getting up into the air. And I said, well, that's half the battle in golf now. And but, yeah, they had, of course, there were six or seven guys that were in that staff meeting group that were golfers. They were
right. Good.
And then there were three or four that golfed occasionally. And then there were three or four that, like my wife, that never, you know, and they had no... last time my wife golfed, we did big shots about 3 or 4 years ago. And before that, they did a bucket of balls about 15 or 20 years ago. So, and she was wearing a dress when they did that. So she at least wore regular pants this time. But yeah,
well,
so.
Watch out if they decide to do the pickleball for staff meeting.
Yeah, she's a shark there. Yeah, yeah, you're right. So... But, I said, I can't even picture, you know, I asked her afterward, because I wasn't there. I said, how did it go? And she said, I can't even picture you out on a golf course on a tee, you know, with a ball on the tee trying to hit the ball. I just can't even in my mind, because I've never seen her do that before. It's never happened. So maybe the same for you. You're not really a golfer either. Huh?
So I can golf, okay. And I have golfed. I would just, if I could choose like a productive morning at work, mm-hmm. or a morning on the golf course, I just get really antsy if my kids were golfers or if I had a real reason to be there.
You don't have to have a car. You could walk it because that's kind of your thing, yeah. Right? You could walk it.
I joked with Brian over at City Hall because Brian's not much of a golfer either. And, and I'm like, hey, did you just like frisbee golf it? You know, I was joking with him. But I actually called Shelly this morning because I was out of town last week. And I'm like, hey, I see the staff meeting notes from June 3rd. What about June 10th? And it actually took her a minute to remember, oh, yeah, we actually did a little golf outing, which is the first time I think in years that they've ever done something that was a little off the normal staff meeting. Because I have to be prepared when we come in. So I read through the minutes that she puts together.
Did she give you anything on the golf tournament then or of them golfing, I mean, does she have anything in her notes?
No, it took her. She said, I didn't have my computer, so I didn't take any notes. But it was funny because, like, it was so anticlimactic for Shelley that it took her a minute to even remember that, oh, yes, that's what we did in place of staff meeting.
It's true. She said, but one thing she told me, so they got carts, right? And I said, honey, you got golf carts. She's like, oh, I'm so tired. And she's actually in really good shape and stuff. And but I said, you're tired and you had golf carts? I said, I've golfed my whole life. I think of all the times I've golfed in my life, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 20 to 30 times, I've had a golf cart once in all the times I've golfed. The other times I had to hoof it, you know? And she's like, well, I can't even imagine. It was so hot. I can't even imagine actually walking that. So, yeah.
But Green Spring is a beautiful course. It's in great shape. And
you will lose a ball or two, no matter how good you are in Green Spring, because there's some lava rock in there.
There, yeah, and the canyon and... And it's in the black. It's been in the black for the last several years, so we're doing good there. And
that's good to hear. That's good to hear. So, all right, Mayor's Cup went well, though, and you raised money for Utah Food Bank, and everybody's happy.
And again, like I say, right along Green Spring Drive, there was a significant amount of an HOA that removed non-functional turf. They left some of that grass in, but right along the sidewalk area, they transitioned that to more of a natural and desert scape. And so that saves, you know, millions of gallons of water. And so back, you know, back to your question, we're doing okay. But here's the thing is we can't take our, you know, sports analogy, we can't take our eye off the ball when it comes to water. And I you hear me say this repetitively, that we live in a desert. We need to act like it.
But I agree.
What I found is that this isn't a left-wing or right-wing issue. People buy into understanding that we need to just be conscientious of our most precious resource. So we're doing well. Washington's wells and springs are tapped. I guess pun intended there. So future growth, we rely on the Water Conservancy District as our wholesale water provider. but we're actively involved there. I'm on that board. I work with other electeds and appointed individuals there and with Zach. So we are actively working. But one of the things that's on our mind is we're not blind to the fact that we could have subsequent dry years like this.
Yeah.
So we are working collaboratively with what we call a drought contingency plan. And so at our last board meeting, I called for, we have kind of the framework for that. Some of those options on this drought contingency plan, none of us want to hear. None of us want to enact. Yeah. And there's these debates that, hey, you know, I've had my grass. I've been here. You know, you should stop the, you know, others for coming in. Well, those that are coming in now are using much less grass and they have a higher standard to meet. And plus, it's more complicated than just I was here first, right, and don't make me cut back on my water use. We all are interconnected with economic factors, with our jobs, and you know, communities are either growing or dying, and so we just need to remain vigilant. So we're going to be working through what do these drought contingency plans look like. So we'll have a meeting with elected officials, probably down at the Dixie Center. We'll have a meeting with the public. And we need to make sure that the public knows that if it got to the point where our reservoirs are dropping to those levels that are dangerous,
yeah,
that we need to enact a clear, measurable contingency action that affect all of us on what is the priority of usage and what gets cut and where does it get cut.
And I think that's what the public wants. That's what your constituents want. They want to hear a leader say, we have a plan for this.
Yeah.
And I know there are the naysayers, well, stop growth, shut the door. I'm here now, shut the door. You know,
that's the worst thing we could do. Yeah. I mean, I'm never chasing growth. Growth is chasing us.
Right.
But anything that's living and healthy has to be growing and evolving to a certain extent. I don't want to get out of our skis on growth, but we do need to have new blood. And certainly I want my kids to be able to live here too, yeah, at some point. Yeah.
Now, a little known, maybe not little, a little publicized piece of an action happened last week. It seemed like it flew under the radar, but the Water Conservancy District has acquired land now in Warner Valley,
yeah,
which means that's kind of the, I mean, we've been talking about putting a reservoir in Warner Valley for 100 years, but this land exchange with the feds,
yes,
has actually paved the way. It could become a reality sometime in the next, well, I'm not going to say year or even 5 years, but in the next, you know, few years.
Bill, you're absolutely right. Jason West, the local director of the BLM here, I recently got a letter from him. That land exchange with Washington County Water Conservancy District and the BLM has been approved. It's for somewhere near, you know, 600 acres,
mm-hmm,
and that acreage would be added to the acreage already acquired by the district for a future Warner Valley Reservoir. Now, there's, yeah, a ton of work that needs to be done, and we, definitely, don't actually have a timeline for Warner Valley,
right,
but we recognize with the regional reuse system and the infrastructure and the pipe and the ability to move water between reservoirs, you know, to purify it the right way for drinking. We have our work cut out for us, but we have a really, really talented team at the Water District,
yeah,
of engineers and attorneys and professionals that are helping all of the members of this regional water supply agreement. They're helping bring us all along because it's a massive lift for this reuse system.
Now, Zach Renstrom tells me that it will be not surface area, but depth-wise, when Warner Valley gets, yeah, done, will be the largest reservoir in, yeah, Washington County.
In acre feet. And I don't remember the exact number of acre feet, but he's right. Dams on the north and the south side. It's one ridge over from Long Valley to the east.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be long and narrow and deep. And likely it will be in Washington City. It's in our boundary plan, and you know, primarily it's you know, for water, but there will also be some recreation components that, yeah, that will be used around the water, and at some point that will open up some additional development in Washington City and in Warner Valley. I mean, we're not in a hurry for any of those things, but when they come, we'll be ready.
Sounds fun. It will be a lake where you could go wakeboarding or water skiing or whatever. Yeah. Unlike Chief Toker will not be. That's not a motorized lake. That's a lake where you can take your paddle boards or whatever, but you're not going to get a speedboat on Chief Toker.
No, this will be another massive. It'll be in the same family as Quail and Sand Hollow.
Very good. All right. We'll be right back. I'm on with Chris Staley here on the Andy Griffin Show.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Eating up the time here. It's already 10 minutes to 10 o'clock.
We need 2 hours, Andy.
Thanks for Chris Staley for coming in and hanging out with me, although apparently you were Chris for the last couple of weeks down in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
So that's okay.
You know, our off-air conversations are almost as fun as our on-air conversations.
That's true. In fact, you mentioned Bear Lake, and I was going to tell a Bear Lake story, and I looked at the thing, and I only had 40 seconds. I'm like, I can't tell that story. I only have 40 seconds. But I will tell it on-air real quick,
yes.
And not to detract too much from Washington City, but I was a young newlywed. My wife and I were staying with another young married couple on the beach of Bear Lake. We were in sleeping bags on the beach of Bear Lake, and we had our food up on a picnic table, and it was dark in the middle of the night. There weren't hardly any stars I don't think the moon was out except for maybe a new moon, and so it was really dark, and so I'm laying there, it's my wife and then my sleeping bag and then maybe 3 or 4 feet and then my buddy and his wife in their sleeping bags, and I hear this rustling over at the picnic table, and of course we're at Bear Lake, so what are we thinking? It's a bear, right?
Right, yeah.
That's what we thought. And so my buddy was within arm's reach, so I kind of reached over and tapped him on his shoulder. And he's like, what? I said, do you hear that? And he goes, what? And so he heard the rustling, too. And he's like, dude, what do you think that is? I said, it's got to be a bear. We're at Bear Lake. It's got to be a bear, right? And he said, what do we do? I said, I have no idea. I don't want to get eaten by a bear at Bear Lake. That sounds terrible. And so we finally decided, both of us had flashlights, so we decided we were going to jump up at the same time and try to scare the bear away, right? So we both jumped up and shined our flashlights, and right on the picnic table eating our chips was a skunk.
Oh!
It did not spray us, though. It ran away. So we were okay there.
Your strategy worked.
We were a little bit worried that a bear was going to eat us. So, and that would have been like 1988. That was a long time ago. So anyway, Chris Staley is on. We're talking Washington City. I know there were a couple updates you wanted to give me before we go. One about a trail that is almost done. Is that what it is?
So, yeah, we're making progress on the historic canal trail.
Historic canal trail. That's right.
Yeah. And that is us acquiring dozens and dozens of easements along what was historically an open ditch canal from the mm-hmm. diversion dam of the Virgin that flood irrigated the fields. That was piped 20 some odd years ago. And we are building a trail over that in sections. Mm-hmm. And so we have 3 sections of trail. We have a few little sections done, but we have a mile and a half equaling about, 3 sections equaling about a mile and a half that will go out for bid within a month and hopefully be built this year sometime. So we keep kind of piecing that together. And that basically will get you from Schnabkaib all the way down along what we call Washington Bench mm-hmm. to Crimson Cliffs High School and tie into our neighbors in St. George, their trail system. So this has been a significant work in, you know, surveying all of those easements and acquiring the easements and designing the route. So I'm really excited because, you know, those communities in the fields don't have as much trail and park access as maybe some north of the Virgin River. So this will be, you know, continue to make progress there. And then I also just wanted to give an update that the Wills Park is under construction. If you've driven out there on the east side of George Washington Boulevard, you know, the lights are up. You see the features are beginning to take shape. The skate park, pump track, the BMX track. It will have our largest playground, splash pad. And my parks guys say, please remind everyone to stay out. It's not done. It's not safe. But it's going to be really nice. 14-acre park on donated land.
Do we have a timeline when it will be open and done?
I'm anticipating this year, but I always estimate, you know, on the conservative side. And so if it's done sooner, but I anticipate by year end at a minimum.
I have a story, by the way, if you want to read more about that historic trail on 890kdxu.com. It's titled Washington City Mayor Makes Historic Announcement.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw that, but and a little picture of the trail under construction. And, yeah, that's up there if you guys want to read about it. We quote extensively from not only Press Daily, but also Lee Bunnell is in there, as well as some of the other award winners back from the State of the City address back at the Heritage Hall.
Yes.
I still want to call it the old gym. I'm trying to get that out of my thing, but
isn't downtown looking so nice?
It is.
Yeah. I mean, it's
I understand the city has acquired the old Nissen grocery store, right?
That entire block.
Are you going to do like one of the, what do they call it, RFPs or RFQs or whatever?
Yes. And that is out right now. It closes at the end of the month.
Okay.
And we're hopeful to get some really good submissions, and the council will select the partner to revitalize downtown area.
So do you then sell that land to whoever wins, or do you keep the land and they rent it?
So that land, we select a partner group, a developer group with mm-hmm. the architect, and with the anticipation that they will build. We work through the design together so they can have the assurances of the entitlements. Then that property transitions to them.
Okay.
So we're holding it in order to facilitate private development. We're not private developers, but we have an interest in a quality downtown.
Right.
And historically, we've had commerce in the heart of Washington City, so we've got to bring that back, doing it with the nod to the past, but modern and functional, and it needs to be activated. People, places, things to do, and so we own that. We're going to preserve and restore the church building there, that meeting house.
Right.
We also own the post office. We own the old Kendall home. We own the property where the Nissen Merck was, mm-hmm. and the Cuba Lyle property where the Telegraph Towers pad is. So all of that is part of that RFP, RFQ, and we hope to have some partners to move forward with those.
I saw there is a new structure being built in Washington City,
yes.
right downtown. What is that?
SUU Head Start.
Oh, okay.
And so that was kind of the old video store and appliance store different things. So we worked really closely with that property owner to get a really nice elevation, a nice plan. And so if you're paying attention on Telegraph, slowly but surely it's improving and transforming. These things can't happen overnight. But Telegraph is our main east-west corridor, and it is a priority. And so we've identified and are very aware of each parcel, and we're working for highest and best use for the community. That's got to reflect well on who we are as Washington, on who we are today as Washington.
Any other thing? We only have 2 minutes left. Any other things you wanted to get to before we let you go?
Yeah, just two quick things.
Okay.
Council allocated $50,000 last night for a design of some improvements at our baseball field near the community center. So redoing either a shade structure or a building there. And then we're also looking at Washington Dome, which is kind of that gray, kind of a roundish hill along the east side of Washington. We have we've hired Avenue Consultants to do a feasibility study. It was a $150,000 grant from the Utah Division of Outdoor Recreation. Go to WashingtonDome.com. Take the survey, look at the maps, give your feedback. But we want to preserve that hillside, that dome. We want to identify the trails, the uses, and prevent further scarring, and use that as an outdoor kind of rough recreation area.
All right, I'm typing in Washington Dome right now on my browser, although I typoed it.
Yeah, WashingtonDome.com, and we're taking all of the public feedback on that.
Feasibility study. Yep.
Yeah, so that's going to be really cool.
Very cool.
We just keep everyone on their toes. We keep things going.
I love it. It says right there, Washington Dome has several existing trails and is a recreation destination for a variety of activities, including hiking, mountain biking, horseback riding, motorbiking, and ATV.
Yes, no paved trails up there, but access. We're looking at parking areas and access, and how do we best use that. Most of that property is BLM. There are some private sections, but we will work with the stakeholders to make that a recreation area and preserve it.
Very cool. Washington Dome. He's Washington City. He has his own Washington Dome. Chris Daly, welcome back to America, and back to your full-time job.
We'll keep the off-air conversation going, Andy.
We will. Thanks, folks, for listening today. We'll be back tomorrow. Open lines. Looking forward to it. Talk to you then.